Hey, well, it's just great for me to be back here at Boulevard Bible Chapel in Hollywood. This is great. I was supposed to be here a year ago. Actually, this thing was all ready to 1 year ago, and I appreciate the fact that many of you prayed for us because Vivian here was with me tonight. Just a week before we left Canada, we're from Hamilton, Ontario in Canada. Just a week before we left Canada, discovered she needed a new heart valve. And we had a little moment of crisis. In fact, Vivian nearly went to heaven. But you see how glad I am she stayed with me. And we appreciate your prayers over there. And I know some of you did pray, and we appreciate that. And we appreciate your warm welcome here. You know, it's warm in two ways. I come from ice and snow. Man, if I told you about the weather, you'd never go near Canada. But getting here is not only warm in the sun, but warm in the fellowship in the Lord. And we appreciate that. So thank you. Now, I'll tell you what's going to be happening while I'm here. I'm such a short guy, sometimes I'll stand here. You know, people say to me, stand up. And I say, I am standing up. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Tonight's a science night, and I'm going to give you some of the chemical and molecular evidence for a creator. You guys better take notes as a quiz, science quiz. Tonight's a science night. And then on Sunday, we're going to give more regular ministry from Ephesians 5 and 6. I'm going to talk about, I'm going to use a PowerPoint, but we won't be doing a lot of experiments then. I may do something, we'll see, but I'm going to talk about living in an alien world in the morning. And at night, I got a very important topic on spiritual warfare from Ephesians 6. So you'll be reading Ephesians 5 and 6 for Sunday. And then Monday at Fort Lauderdale, a missionary study class, very important for you older believers, well, for all of us, I want to talk about witnessing in a changing world. An alien world, a changing world. I've got to deal with those things, and that's what we're going to do. But tonight is science night, and I'm talking about life by design. And, man, I'm really into life by design tonight because, you know, just an hour ago, I got a phone call on my cell phone from Canada. My son was on the phone. He said, congratulations, Granddad. You've got your first granddaughter. And little, what's she called, Vivian? I didn't even... Eliana. Just born an hour ago in Canada. I got three grandsons. So was I ready for a granddaughter? So I thought, I'm in the mood to talk about life by design because that was, of course, a gift from God, which we're thankful because there was a little medical crisis associated with the birth that the Lord sorted out. I do hope you pray about these things, you know. It's amazing what God does when you pray. But, hey, that's not what I'm talking about tonight. I've got to get moving here. And talk about life by design. Now, Malcolm told me I could take all kinds of time tonight. I won't preach this long on Sunday. Don't panic. I think I want to start off tonight with a word of warning. Many of you know I was a chemistry professor at McMaster University for many years. Just... In 95, I retired early to go into Christian ministry, commanded by Bethany Gospel Chapel in Hamilton, Ontario. But I'm still the kind of professor that likes to do experiments. And you know, I love to do these experiments. But this is my warning. You see, I like to mix things. And when I teach at the university, this was always my first class. Like these brave students, they like to sit on the front row. But what I want to warn you about is this was always my second class. So I hope you're ready for that. Because chemistry is pretty exciting, you know. It's about exciting changes. It's fun. You get all kinds of reactions. Now, I hope, can you guys see this here? I'll hold some of them up, but this one's a little tough to elevate. I should have, yeah, Viv, you put that in a safe spot, and if you can't see, you'll just have to let me know, but I'll do something tricky here. I'll try to make sure you can see this, because I just want you to realize chemistry is exciting. Well, actually, I'm feeling thirsty. I was trying to mix a little Kool-Aid here, but it doesn't seem to be very successful, but I'm actually taking one of those 100 building blocks of which everything in the universe is made. This is one you get in your bananas every morning, called potassium, and showing you some of these elements are so reactive that even in this cold water, which has got a bit pink, you must have pretty basic water in in Hollywood. But even in this cold water, potassium reacts quite violently. In fact, sets on fire. And man, I did warn you about the front row. I've even burst my balloon. Oh, dear me. Oh. I'm sorry about that, but I did want to tell you that chemistry is very exciting. And of course, I always make my own Kool-Aid, so in the refreshments I'll be okay. I got some less, much stronger stuff. Now that smoke won't do you any harm at all. Mind you, I have to say, when I started doing chemistry, I was 6 foot tall. But there you go. But it is fun. You know, why chemistry is fun? It deals with invisible atoms and molecules. I mean, this chapel is built with great big blocks. I mean, you can't miss bricks like this. Anybody can build a building with blocks like this, and it's handy if you fall asleep, you see. This is a very light one. But what chemists do is they build with invisible atoms and molecules. We put together little molecular buildings, but our building blocks are invisible. Yeah, and I want you to understand this. The invisible atoms are real. You look like a bright science student. What can you see in there? What can you see? Well, what can you see in there? Hey, what did you say? Now this guy's on his way for a Nobel Prize. Now, mind you, if you can see air, you've got pretty good eyesight, but he's got the point. Hey, you can't see anything but what's in there. Hey, you're pretty sleepy tonight. Take a deep breath. Come on. You feel it. Man, do you get that life-giving oxygen? Hey, you may not be able to see air, but you can feel it. And you know it's there. You see, it's invisible but real. And what I want to do tonight, I want to talk about atoms and molecules, of course. Those invisible but real things that we feel. But I also want to talk about, God, who is invisible but real. So what we're actually going to do, and I'll do my little sign, we'll do God in a nice heavenly blue, and we'll do atoms in a nice earth tones here from the earth. I want to talk about the way in which these invisible atoms and molecules give evidence for God. People say, where's God? I can't see God. We're going to see God has shown himself in many ways, of course, as a Christian, especially in the Lord Jesus Christ. But I'm going to show that even these little invisible atoms and molecules give clear evidence for a purposeful creator. So it's that beautiful blue is reminding us God's in heaven, but these atoms on earth give evidence for a creator. You see, because in science, just like in the Christian faith, and you science students need to remember this, we don't make up truth, we discover it. You know, I'm going to show you a very famous scientist. Many of you will recognize this very famous scientist, Snoopy. Now here's Snoopy, and he's reading a scientific paper. He's reading this crazy claim. It says here that some birds have magnetic heads. He reads, some birds have iron oxide in a tissue behind their eyes that helps them navigate. Now, how are you going to know if that's true, you see? But Snoopy's a good scientist because, first of all, he wonders about things. I hope you haven't lost your sense of wonder. And he looks at poor little Woodstock and he says, hey, I wonder if that's you. But he knows how to find out. You see, he's a good scientist. Out of his pocket, he gets the magnet, and there's poor little Snoopy on the end of the magnet, and he says, it's you all right. But he made his conclusion that it was you all right, what, based on an experiment. You see, because you get a lot of baloney sometimes in school. I want to tell you the truth. It's something we discover, and it doesn't even depend on whether you can explain it. A lot of things about God and about science we can't explain, but we observe them. You see, the important question, truth doesn't depend on whether you can explain it. That's the first thing I want to say, because the important question is, did it happen? Not can it happen? I talk on university campuses about the resurrection of Jesus from the dead and stuff like that, and some of my professor colleagues say, hey, that can't happen. And I say, what kind of a scientist are you? The question is not, can it happen, but did it happen? You know, in the Bible it says, you come and see the place where the Lord lay. And what we have in the Bible is observational evidence for real events. Hey, maybe you can't explain it, but the criteria is not whether you can explain it. Look, I'm going to show you something that probably you can't explain. We'll put this up here where you can see it, and I'm not going to drink that Kool-Aid, so I'll try some of this stuff. I'm going to mix myself a little beverage here. I'm hoping these solutions, you know, I came over the border with all these chemicals just when all this fuss was going on about terrorism, and I thought, man, once they see my luggage, I'll never get through. I'll start a prison ministry. But the Lord's wonderful. He used ribbon as a decoy. My wife has celiac disease, which means she can't eat any wheat flour. It's a gluten intolerance. So she has to bring all this rice bread and potato bread and gluten-free food. She has all this stuff in advance. So the customs guy, or the chap at the U.S. border said, have you got anything besides clothes? And Vivian was driving. I always put Vivian at the wheel, you see, because who would think a grandmother was a terrorist? So she said, oh, I've got food for my disease. I got celiac disease. Oh, he said, you better go on off with that. He never even asked me what I had. So here we are. So the Lord always uses Vivian as a decoy. Now, so I got these things, but of course I've had them in my van for a couple of weeks, so who knows? I've got to guess the amounts. We're having a fun time tonight, but we'll see what happens. See, I want to show you something, and I'm kind of measuring as I go along here. I want to show you something that, I'm taking a bit longer because I'm saving a bit of this for another group. I've been asked to go to a school, and I was going to blow all my solutions on you tonight, but I'm just trying to save a little bit here, and we'll see what happens. Okay. I think we've guessed it about right now. Well, let's stir this up. Now, watch this carefully. I'm making some nice sparkling apple juice. Beautiful. Oh, man, what's happened to my sparkling apple juice? I can't believe it. I thought it was sparkling apple juice. But, it's come back. Ah, that's great. Oh, I got it. Now this is like a clock reaction. You know how at the end of a wonderful day the sun sets and the darkness falls? You can rely on it. And after a good night's sleep, God is so good, you can always rely on the fact that the sun will come up the next morning. And sure enough it does, and the daylight comes. And so the daylight comes, and you have that wonderful day, and then the sun slowly sets, and at the end of the day the night falls. That's an oscillating reaction. It's like the one that keeps your heart beating. Yeah. Like the one that puts you to sleep at night and wakes you up in the morning. Now the question is, can you explain it? Probably not unless you did my graduate course at the university. But did it happen? Did it happen? Hey, whether you can explain it or not, it happened. And this is what we need to say as we witness to the resurrection. You see, I'm not talking about whether we explain it. I'm talking about whether it happened. And that will eventually die down to some kind of black solution there. But we'll just leave that. Because I want you to understand, you see, that we don't make up truth, we discover it. And let's just say, oh, wait a minute, what's this I got here? I've just got to make the point that sometimes we can't explain it. I've been a science teacher all my life, so I've run into some crazy explanations, and I thought as a little break tonight, we're going to have a little fun here too. I'll show you a couple of my students under a tree at McMaster talking about science. And this guy says, and why is airspeed different from ground speed? Well, his friend said, that's simple, because the earth is round and the air is flat. So he said, well, what holds things together? Well, he said, Velcro. Neutrons and protons are held together by Velcro. By the way, if you're a science student, I hope you know the real answer. That's electrostatic forces that holds the atoms together. And if you're a Christian, I hope you know the real answer. Colossians 1:16, in Christ, all things hold together. He holds things together. That's the real answer. Anyway, these students can't explain things, as you can see. The last one was, gee, why do days get longer in summer? He said, well, that's because heat makes things expand. So as he thanked him, he said he had a natural talent for science. I want you to know there's a lot of wrong explanations about. No question about that. I'm stressing tonight that truth is not a matter of opinion. See, we believe in revealed truth, in science, by experiment, and as a Christian, by revelation. This is my source of truth, God's revealed word. You see, there's two models for truth. What's the correct picture? One's like a rock that we uncover, and the other's a melting pot. Just combine the opinions and stir them up. We have people going around our campus with surveys all the time, as if collecting all these opinions would somehow generate truth. You look a pretty bright crew tonight, so here's a tough math question. Are you ready for it? What's 2 plus 2? 4 is there on the ball. Now, if I'd asked this student, she'd probably have said 5, right? But if she'd said 5, I'd have said, well, you're wrong. I wouldn't have said, okay, well, it's a matter of opinion. Maybe we'll say 4.5. Take the average. You think 4, you think 5. You wouldn't do that. You'd say, you're wrong and you're right. You see, there's such a thing as wrong and right, and you wouldn't think that sometimes, listening to teachers and reading some of these new books that they're writing. Truth is like a rock to be uncovered. And I, as a Christian, of course, I discover truth in wonderful experiments in science, but even deeper truth about the meaning of life. See, I find about the mechanisms in science, but I find the meaning in the Bible, the revealed word of God. See, both science and the Christian faith are based on evidence. It's not wishful thinking. It's not superstition. You know, sometimes when I'm doing these kinds of experiments, some young students think I was a magician. Now, if I was a magician, I'd have a wand like this, you see. I could make that brother at the back disappear like this. Say, oh, it's supposed to give a flash, but it just gave a bang. We'll try that again. Well, there we go. Yeah, there we go. He didn't disappear at all. Still there. He's awake now, too. This is good. Just kidding. But you see, I'm a scientist. In fact, I should put my lab coat on if I'm going to convince other scientists. I got to have a white coat. Scientists always have white coats, right? And now you're going to believe me, eh? Surprising how many people shout loudly in white coats saying science says that. And people believe them because of that. But you see, we do have to explain things. I think I burst my balloon in that experiment. We'll blow another one off. Professors always have lots of hot air, so there's no problem blowing balloons up. There you go. Now this isn't a trick. This isn't magic. It's science. I know about molecules. So I know rubber molecules are long and thin and stretchy. So I can take a needle, and I can... See, I know that since rubber's long and thin and stretchy, if I put the needle carefully into the balloon, it won't burst. It will actually go into the balloon, and the rubber will seal around a hole. This is a pretty cheap balloon I got at the dollar store, but I might be able to push the needle right out the other end if I'm careful. Let's try it. We'll push that, and the needle's going right into the balloon, and it's going through the rubber, and it's sealed, except I made such a big hole it's collapsing. But it didn't burst. Now, you see, people say, how could you put a needle through a balloon without bursting it? It's not like, it's because you know about the properties, and of course, when things happen, you can explain them. And I want to tell you that tonight, what I am telling you is that having studied this for many years, that the best explanation for life is intelligent design by a purposeful creator. You hear all kinds of stories about life arising by chance and slowly developing, and we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. So what I'm actually going to do tonight is give you, in the time we have, some of the chemical and molecular evidence for a creator. Now, some of you already missed some experiments, but I will tell you the good news. I do actually have a video on this chemical and molecular evidence. I've had this out for some time. I think I had it last time I was here. I'm doing a new DVD, hopefully this summer. But this is called The Astonishing Elements of Life, and I have a lot more experiments on it than I can do tonight. But I'll do a good number tonight. We'll have a good time. But that is available. Unfortunately, because of the distributor agreement, I do have to charge you the bookstore price for that. But if anyone was wanting to get the experiments, that's available. The good news is, of course, it's $20 in Canada, but you guys have real money, so it's only $15. But anyway, that's at the back. Together, by the way, I'll say more about this on Monday when I talk about witnessing in a changing world, but there are some of my little bookmarks mentioning this website, scienceshort.com, with a little picture that will remind you. I'll explain what that website's about, but it's a witnessing tool where I use science as a way of witnessing. I'm going to challenge you on Monday about whether you are using your bait to witness. So the video on bookmarks at the back, I just mentioned that now because once I get into this chemical and molecular evidence, I'll get so excited I might forget to say that. But you see, what I want to say is intelligent design is the best explanation for life. And of course it's true. You always knew this if you knew your Bible. In both science and the Christian faith, we don't make up truth, we discover it, we've said that. But Romans 1:20 is a basic verse that makes it clear that what I'm saying is absolutely right. I said God's invisible. Hey, God's invisible qualities, His eternal power, His divine nature, said Romans 1:20, has been clearly seen, being understood from what? What has been made? And what I'm doing, what's been made are the atoms and molecules. So what I'm really doing tonight is showing you some of the reasons why Romans 1:20 is absolutely true, that God's invisible, but His power is clearly seen, and it's understood from what has been made. And what has been made is, of course, well, the atoms and molecules that I said we would talk about. The simplest kind of substance you learn in your chemistry class is called an element. And of course, what happens is the elements make compounds, and the simplest of those is water. I'm going to talk about water tonight. That's one of the simplest substances, but it's great evidence for a creator. But all our life, all our bodies, all our physical life is built on the element carbon. And we're going to talk about carbon, because that makes big molecules. That famous molecule DNA is wonderful evidence for our intelligent, purposeful creator, the wonderful God that Christians worship. So we're going to talk about water and carbon and DNA, just some of the molecules of life. And even this small molecule, the simplest molecules of life like water, give remarkable evidence of design and the touch of the creator's hand. So why don't we look first of all at water? In fact, we could. You don't usually have to make water, but being a chemist, I like to make things. So I have. Where's that little bottle here? That pop bottle, Vivian. You won't be surprised if a pop bottle goes pop, will you? The babies. Vivian's worried about the baby. Sometimes this is a bit much for the babies because it does bang, right? So if you spend all night getting your baby to sleep, be warned. This is a moment. And I'm very empathetic towards babies now. I can't believe how big they grow. I mean, my new one, only 2 hours old, is much smaller than that. But anyway, be ready for this. And if you've got a pacemaker in, turn it down. And if you're not right with the Lord, this is a good moment. All right. Now, I've only got a little pop bottle. I'm going to take mercy on you tonight. And before I left McMaster 3 weeks ago, I fill this with hydrogen and oxygen. Hope it hasn't leaked out. If it hasn't leaked out, we can show the hydrogen oxygen explode to make water. You all know H2O, right? That's the only chemistry we're learning tonight. Hydrogen H2, oxygen O2 combined to give that wonderful life-sustaining gift of God, water. Did I say O2? H2O. Vivian corrects the chemistry. I'm so excited tonight, I can't even see. Alright, now, let's see. Malcolm Skelton's a good shot. Where's Malcolm? We'll shoot right over at Malcolm. But I'm going to take the stopper out of the bottle so you can relax. Take the bottle to the candle. And Vivian puts her fingers in her ears. It's only a small bottle, but you need to be ready for it. Hydrogen plus oxygen gives... water! I did warn you! Man, oh man! You're a nervous crew. All right, look at this. Isn't that wonderful? Now, would you like to cup your hands together like this? You cup your hands together. You can pass that round to class. But water, you know, I haven't time to talk about water much tonight, but water is wonderful evidence. Of course, I have a bit of sympathy with this man who came to the chemistry teacher. This father showed up to the chemistry teacher and said, look, if you're going to teach him water comes from hydrogen and oxygen, I also want him to know you can get it from a regular river. Because you don't normally have to make water, and in fact, God has given us a wonderful supply. But the thing about, seriously, what I want to say, water's fine-tuned for the job. I mean, I haven't time to tell you the details tonight, but in Canada, of course, we get plenty of ice this time of the year, and you'd be very glad if you were a fish that ice floats. See, water's less dense. Ice is less dense than water, which is fairly unusual for a solid to be less dense than its liquid. It has a long liquid range. It controls our climate. And, it's, of course, it's made out of just two of those 100 building blocks of which everything's made. So water in itself could be evidence for a creator. And one of the things I want to tell you about water is, of course, it has unusual properties. Has this particularly peculiar density. I won't go into all the technical details. But you see, what we do need to understand a little bit of chemistry tonight to get the argument. What we understand is that water's special properties are because of its structure. It's got an O and two H's in an atom like that. And it bonds to itself in a special way. And what I want you to know is that every one of the millions and millions and millions of compounds in this universe, all made out of those 100 building blocks, there are only 100 of these chemical elements, about 100, you can argue about one or two, but 100 building blocks, millions of compounds, but each compound has its own unique property. And I want you to understand that, so I'm just going to show you. I've got some water here. You all know what water's like. We got some, I'm dropping the mic on the floor, so I'll just pop that in my pocket, I think. That should be working. And I've got something else here that's also made out of hydrogen and oxygen. Now maybe I'll put this one up here, because you've seen water before. We'll catch it. But Vivian always thinks I'm going to mess up the carpet, so we'll have the tray ready in a minute. I've got a clear liquid here. This is water. We've all seen colorless water, wonderful stuff. Keeps us alive, supports life. There's desperately try to find it on Mars, because then they think it will be evidence that life is possible, because life doesn't exist without water. But I've got something here that's also made out of hydrogen and oxygen. Looks like water. Then you can pop the top on that, because I'm bound to spill it. This is also a clear liquid. It's made out of the same elements as water. It looks like water, but it isn't water. In fact, can any of you bright science students think of a compound that's only made of hydrogen and oxygen that would be a colorless liquid and it's not water? What could it possibly be? Peroxide. There's a bright chemist. Hydrogen peroxide. May have some in your medicine. That's got extra oxygen in it. Water's H-O-H. This is H-O-O-H. And we can get some of that extra oxygen out. You see, I've got some stuff here that one of my students donated. They'll do anything for a few extra marks, so gave me a little blood here. Of course, if I put a little bit of this blood into water, it just mixes. And by the way, there's a separate lecture on blood. I do this a little on the videotape. Blood in itself could be the most wonderful evidence of a creator. That red molecule that you see there carries oxygen to every part of your body, and it's fine-tuned to do that. But I don't have time to tell you about all the molecules tonight. What I do want to show you is that this blood has all kinds of enzymes and catalysts in it, and when I put it into the hydrogen peroxide, it doesn't just mix. This time it has different properties. So I put it in there, and it decomposes. And man, oh man, Vivian said use the tray, so I better do that. That does look good, sir. See, the oxygen comes off. It looked like water, but it wasn't water. It's made of the same elements as water. And it's just this reminder that every molecule has its own unique properties. And they're fine-tuned for the job. And it's important you remember that when we talk about the way in which God has put together the molecules of which we are made, because they have some very, very distinct properties, some unique properties. So that's a little bit of background chemistry and a reminder that water is part of the evidence for a creator. But I want to talk about the main building block of life. I want to talk about the element carbon. Now, I'm old enough to remember when in the old country, you could tell from my accent, I originally came from London, England. We heated our homes with this stuff. What's this stuff? Coal. It's carbon. You know, coal is a pure form of carbon. I want to tell you, this is the same element as diamond. In fact, if you fall in love sometime during the spring and you can't afford a diamond ring, talk to me, because I'm going to make some of this. This is actually more stable than diamond. It's the same element, so don't worry about a diamond. Coal will do the job. But I want to tell you, the thing about coal is it's the building block of life. It has very unique properties. You see, carbon, of all these 100 building blocks, it's the only one that forms long chains and rings. It's uniquely fitted to build these big molecules upon which life depends. There would be no physical life such as we enjoy if carbon didn't have these unique properties. And so I think, well, I better make some carbon. I know you like to see experiments, and this one makes a little bit of a smell, so I don't know where Vivian can take it. Maybe you can take it out the back exit, because these... You can fix it up, right? Vivian's... I always give Vivian the dangerous experiments. I thought that I could make some carbon, so... we'll do that before I tell you how it's wonderful evidence for a creator. Now, I got something made out of hydrogen and oxygen and carbon. You saw water's made out of hydrogen and oxygen. This, I think I need a volunteer. You look very brave. Now, will you wet your finger like that? Dip it in there, taste it, and tell me what you think it is. Just, you're braver than she is. Come on. Now, wet your finger. Taste it, and tell me what you think it is. Can you get it? I haven't got very much in there. I didn't want to frighten the life out of you. Taste it. Come on. Hey, what's your name? Big hand for Jason. See, I knew it was sugar or cyanide. I'd say, of course, I knew it was sugar, but it's sugar, that's right. Anyone know the formula of sugar? Oh, yeah, she's reminding me, you mustn't taste chemicals, only when I told you. Of course, I knew it was sugar. Vivian's reminding me, don't you go around tasting things, because some chemicals are nasty and some are nice. Sugar's one of the nice ones. But sugar's just carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. Who knows the formula of sugar? Hey, come on. Let's have it, Johnny. Where are you? Oh, he's on the ball, this guy. And what you notice is, what, 6 into 12? You're the expert too, right? That's just carbon and water. H12O6, it's the same ratio. So if I can take the water out of the sugar, what will I have? I'll have the carbon. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to take that H12O6, that H2O, out of there and see if we can get the carbon, the building block of life. I'm just going to put a little water on that to get it a bit excited. And then what I'm going to do, I have an acid here. I'll hold this up in a minute so you can see it. I have an acid here that just loves the old water. This is an acid that we call a dehydrating agent, and it's just going to grab that water out of the sugar. I've got to guess this because I'm saving a little bit for another occasion, but I got to get it about right, so we'll put this acid on here, very strong acid that just loves the old water. Right, you put the top on this, Vivian, before we spill it, because that's not stuff we need to hang around. And then we will stir this up here. And now I'll hold it up in a minute. This is going black. That's a good sign because you know that carbon's black. What's happening here is that acid is taking the water out of the sugar. And man, it's coming. Look at it. Look how much carbon you can get out of that little bit of sugar. Wow. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, Vivian, take that away. Man, oh, man. Oh, well, hey, That reminds me of sin so much. It starts small, but you can't control it, man. Oh, I'm glad Jesus is in my life so I have that purity of Christ. Just a little sermon on the side there, but I want to talk to you about carbon. Because it is an amazing substance. And it's part of the evidence for a creator. You know, this building block of life, I want to tell you, a non-Christian professor in England, a well-known Sir Fred Hoyle, a cosmologist, now died a couple of years ago, big name if you're in science, who had no Christian faith at all, he made a remarkable discovery about the production of carbon, and it's too technical to give it a detail, but he pointed out that carbon's very existence depends on an unlikely coincidence in the stars. And when he understood the delicate positioning of several properties needed for the production of carbon in stars, it's an amazing story, but you've got to know a lot of science to understand it. What he said, and this was remarkable, Fred Hoyle said, a common sense interpretation suggests that a super intellect monkeyed with the physics and the chemistry. You see, what scientists are beginning to realize and what Hoyle said as he looked at the very existence of carbon is, it's like a super intellect's done it. Now, of course, the Christian understood an omnipotent God is what he's really talking about. But you see, carbon production is just one more example of how the universe is just right for life. If you play golf, you'll understand this. I say about the Creator that he got a hole-in-one every time. You know, if I played golf and I got a hole-in-one, you'd say, that's amazing. If I got a total score of 18, that every hole was a hole-in-one, you'd say, something funny's going on. But that's how creation is. You see, we can't talk about coincidence and chance in those circumstances, and you'll see that particularly now when I talk about the big molecules of life. It's a very important stuff. You see, life is actually built not just on water and simple molecules like that, but on these huge, what we call polymers, and molecules like DNA, and I want to talk about those. Now, of course, if you're a scientist who doesn't believe in a creator, like many of my colleagues, they'd say, well, David, you can join carbon atoms together by natural causes. You don't have to pray to make big molecules out of carbon. And, of course, they're right. All those polymers and plastics we make today, I'll hold this up in a minute, are carbon atoms joining in long chains, like I showed you. You can get carbon joining in long chains. In fact, the very first polymer that was made as a result of a deliberate search was nylon. And I'm old enough to remember my mother lining up to get a first pair of nylon stockings in England. This was so exciting in 1945, before many of you were born. But I'm going to make some nylon in this little beaker here, because I make my own fishing lines, you know. Just kidding about that, but I will make a fishing line. I don't even fish, but you see, when I join these two liquids together, there's a line of nylon being formed, and as I pull that, you can pull it out in a long chain because the carbon atoms are joining together. And when carbon atoms join together, I'm making a, and the Vivians can just pull this down. If I was a decent height, I could make yards and yards of this, but we'll just go. I'm going to pull it fairly fast because I can't be here all night. I know you've got to go home by 11 o'clock, so we'll just break that. You see, the carbon atoms are joined together, and they've just gone on the carpet nicely. there you go. Carbon atoms are joined together, and of course that was natural causes. And that's a big molecule, and so naturalists, that is, people who believe, where is that, dear? Well, just put it all together. That little bit has disappeared on me. There we go. Naturalists have just believed that everything's by natural causes. So, well, you see, you know, you didn't need to bring God into that. And I'll just, we could have had a lot of nylon out of that. But I want you to understand tonight that what I'm talking about, the big molecules of life are very different. I want to tell you that the key molecules of life are not like that. They do give clear evidence of a creator. It is true what the Bible says in Romans 1:20. And we see that particularly in this molecule DNA. So I'm going to take as my example the famous molecule DNA, but before I do that, I want you to understand it, and since you're not chemists and I'm not scientists, I'm going to give you an analogy. First of all, I'm going to take you to Arizona, and we'll see that desert and that rock. Now, if you are a Christian person who believes in a creator, you might say, isn't God wonderful? Look at that natural sculpture. Look at those patterns in the sand. Look at the beauty of the blue sky. And a naturalist who doesn't believe in God is going to say, hey, this is natural causes. This is rock erosion. This is the wind and the rain. This patterns are blown by the wind and the rain has eroded the rocks. You can't get carried away like that. But I'm going to show you a different kind of rock erosion. Now we're in a different place. We'll take a little trip to Mount Rushmore and see the faces of those famous presidents, Washington, Jefferson, Roosevelt, and Lincoln, carved in a granite cliff of Mount Rushmore. And when you see that, what do you say? You say, who did it? He said, that's amazing. Who did it? You never say, it's amazing what that wind and rain can do. You see, you can recognize the difference between intelligent design and natural causes. Of course, the rock erosion's natural causes. This is intelligent design where we say, who did it? And that's exactly what we have to say when we look at the DNA molecule. The DNA is like the four faces. And that's what we want to see, and that's a little analogy that will help you understand it as we talk about this very complicated-looking molecule. You see, the DNA is a carrier of inheritance. I'll just be a bit technical for a moment. It expresses information through these molecules, the molecular intermediates, we call them, and it's really a compelling molecular analog of the four faces. It was a discovery of DNA, and it was unraveled when I was a graduate student in London, England, that revealed that a core of life, there's a molecular message that contains a staggering amount of information. You know, a single cell in your body has more information in it than all the volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And it's the origin of those, what we call, information-carrying molecules that's the key challenge in explaining life. You see, we all started life in the same way, as a tiny ball, smaller than a pinhead. We all started off as pinheads. But that molecule contained our DNA, and it spelled out our physical characteristics. How do you think I got so tall and good-looking, you see? My mother was only 4'10". My dad had short sight like I have. All that stuff, hair color, nose shape, eye, all that is carried in the molecule. I'm dying to see this new granddaughter. I hope they email me a picture when I get home, because I want to see if she's got a nose like grandma or mom or all those things. We'll notice those characteristics because DNA carries information, and you don't know what problems I have as a little guy. You see, this is me getting dressed in the morning. It's all right for you big guys. But you see, my height and everything that happens to me is carried by this molecule, which you see stylized here. And it's particularly in this molecule that we see an order that demands an intelligent cause. And I want to explain this a bit to you, because you can best understand the way DNA works. It's like a language. Those molecular sequences in DNA, they spell out in coded form instructions to the cells. And they work just like letters in the alphabet in conveying information in a sentence. So your genes, and I don't mean those blue pants you wear, but your molecular genes with a G that make you physically what you are, they're just short bits of DNA. They're arranged like beads on a string. You know, if you unravel the DNA in just one of your cells, it would stretch for 2 meters. And those genes, they're like paragraphs in DNA language. They're instructions for making over 250,000 parts in your body. That's more parts than in a jetliner. And those instructions are all carried by the DNA molecule. No wonder in this cartoon, the molecule said, I hate being a DNA molecule. There's so much to remember. But you see, a DNA molecule does have a lot to remember. Because the genetic code that you read about in your science book so much And in the newspapers these days, it's just a molecular communication system. It uses these chemical letters to give information to these cells. And you know very well, in the case of a written message, you know from experience, it always has an intelligent cause. Even if you found just a four-letter word in a bottle on the beach, you wouldn't go, it's amazing, H-E-L-P came together by accident. You go, man, somebody needs help. You see, because you'd know there was a message and there was a mind behind it. And that's exactly what we know from DNA. You see, you never went into a restaurant and had the waiter come and say, hey, the alphabet soup's quite thought-provoking today. Because the alphabet soup never says anything. Those letters don't give a message. It's just a jumble of the alphabet. But DNA gives a very clear message. I'm so excited about my granddaughter, I gotta show you a picture of the dad. I just happen to have this picture, so that's four generations of my family. This is the guy, that's just produced the granddaughter. This is the third grandson I have, and this is the handsome member of the family, and this is my father. My father died 2 years ago, 96, wonderful Christian man. The last thing I talked to him about was going to heaven, a great fellow. And this was taken just a week before he died, so he was in great shape at 96. But I'm showing you this picture, not to give you my family history, but just to remind you, the power of DNA, you see, he was short-sighted, and I'm short-sighted, and this guy's short-sighted, and he'll be getting his glasses soon, I guess. I'm just hoping her daughter escapes the gene. But you see, there's a message there. And it's in this molecule that you see an order that demands a creator. And so, on the basis of analogy,